If you feel like you're not safe online, you're dead right. Cybercriminals lurk everywhere, waiting for the chance to take advantage of an unsecured target. That's not paranoia. That's just a fact of daily life now that massive data breaches have become common. But there are ways to protect yourself, and there are things you can do if your personal information has already been leaked. And another fact of life is getting pulled over by the police. Few of us have been exempt from this hair-raising experience, but many of us don't know our rights and don't know the things we shouldn't do to keep the experience from being worse. We look at the recent example of a traffic stop on the Miami Dolphins player Tyreek Hill to unpack this delicate issue. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. It seems like we can't go a week without hearing about another data breach. It's become increasingly clear that it's almost impossible to keep the bad guys from getting all of our personal information. So what can we do? Steve Cobb is the Chief Information Security Officer at Security Scorecard, and he's with us right now to explain some of the issues here. Thanks for being with us. And, you know, first of all, with all of the news of the new data breaches that we're hearing that are landing in our inboxes, can you offer any comfort at all, or are things as grim as they feel when you get those notices?
I'm afraid to say they're as grim as they feel. I think, and this is something that's happening across the U.S., I think especially with younger generations, we don't value our personal information as much as what we had in the past. And so a lot of these data breaches, as we get notices in the mail, they become noise. We become desensitized to it. And I think that's one of our challenges, is understanding how personal, how important, and how sensitive this data is, and what can happen when it falls into the wrong hands.
So do we just stop using our credit cards and move into a cave somewhere?
No, I think there's very specific things that you can do to protect yourself online, and also in the financial world when you're making transactions. So, you know, understanding about your browsing habits, what you're doing on the internet, what you're posting, what you're consuming, who you're doing business with from a consumer standpoint, all those things are important. I think it's important as well for us to have questions, tough questions, with those people that are providing us goods and service about what they're going to do with our data, how they're going to use it, and what rights we have. And it varies from state to state, but what rights we have as consumers to protect our data and hold them accountable if it does leak.
So the most recent breach we found out about affects something like 3 billion records from, this hack. I mean, is this like the worst ever? Is all that data going to this thing called the dark web?
Yeah, typically when these breaches happen and this data leaks out, it gets put out on the dark web in total, I should say. I mean, so yeah, there's a good chance that all that data that you've heard reported as being 3 billion records, wherever it is out in the open now. And I think that's another thing for us as consumers to understand, is what data that is and how it can be used against us. Our social security numbers, date of birth, address, phone numbers, all those things can be used by scammers, by nefarious actors to do bad things to us.
A lot of this is very disturbing, but before we get to how we deal with some of this, can you describe the dark web? It sounds like some creepy haunted house at Halloween.
It fits right in with October coming up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's a segmented part of the internet that does not use the traditional convenience that we have when we go and browse on the internet and we type in, you know, www.foxnews or whatever it might be, and it takes us directly to the site. Everything's done anonymously. It's very difficult to track. People don't trace their steps. All that's turned off. And so what it gives rise to is a lot of nefarious actors who are doing things that normally they wouldn't do because they know they're safe in the anonymity of the dark web. And you know, there's lots of bad things to get into in the dark web, and that's where attackers or threat actors and those sorts of people really thrive, because they can do it almost without any type of retribution.
Yeah, but it's all very upsetting. I mean, when you get this notice that your social security number is out there, your phone number is out there, and you start getting these phone calls or these text messages that say, "Hi, your name is in my contact book. How do I know you?"
Yes.
And that's a fish, right? That's somebody fishing.
Yes, that's
what
correct.
Can you do beyond changing passwords?
So changing passwords is we consider that be a basic step, but it's very important. It's also very important to make sure you use different passwords across your sites. One of the things that happens with these breaches of dumps, especially if passwords are involved, if you use the same password on multiple websites, the attacker has that password now. They'll go and try to log in as you on your bank account, your credit card account, any other type of account they can in order to steal money for you or either extract some other type of extortion from you. So taking care of passwords and making sure you use different passwords, use a password manager is a really good thing to do.
Use a word like password for your password.
Most definitely not. In fact, we would recommend you use something like a passphrase. So a phrase mixed with uppercase, lowercase letters that you can remember, that you can use on a site. It's much better than making up a word that's difficult or a phrase that's difficult for you to remember. It's much better to use a phrase you can remember.
You know, we can do things like block phone numbers. We can do all kinds of things to circumvent some of this. But with our social security numbers out there, we can't just change that. So how do we deal with that when the social security numbers become compromised?
You have to, even though you get those messages from companies who get breached to say, we're giving you a years of credit monitoring, whatever the case may be. I do think it's important for people to act on that. So using the credit monitoring service to watch when your accounts are being used, your social security number or other personal information, to either open accounts, close accounts, take actions on your behalf. These credit monitoring services have become a fact. They are part of life now, and monitoring your credit and what happens to your accounts on a day-to-day basis is something that people really need to be aware of, and it's something that we're going to have to start doing in the U.S. as part of our normal everyday tasks, checking our credit monitoring and seeing what's going on.
But you can't change a social security number.
You can't change that. That's correct.
So what do you do?
You have to monitor it. There's really nothing you could do to block those things. You can do what's called a credit freeze, which means you go to the credit bureaus and have your accounts frozen so nothing new can be done using your social security number. Those and everyone can get a different experience there. It works really well for some people. For some people, it doesn't. That is one action you can take to protect yourself. But you're right. When that number's out, there's not anything you can do about it. That is the number that you're given by the federal government. That's the number you own. And if somebody has it, then really all you can do is start looking at trying to prevent it being misused.
All right. Don't go away, Steve. We have a lot more questions for you, including how to protect ourselves from the quote unquote Internet of Things. We don't like to think about it, but the more connected we are with all of our devices, the more opportunities hackers have to cause chaos. We'll be right back with that right after this break. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth, and continuing to be with us is the Chief Information Officer for Security Scorecard, and his name is Steve Cobb. And Steve, there's so many things I want to ask you about. You know, after all the news about hackers targeting our personal data, now you're telling us we need to worry about our TVs and our refrigerators?
That's correct. I mean, in today's world, we call it the Internet of Things. It essentially means anything that a consumer buys these days is more than likely going to be connected to the Internet in some way or fashion. Stoves, refrigerators, TVs. And as you think about, these vendors or these corporations that we're buying these products from, you know, what are they going to do with this? They're not using it nefariously. But there's a lot of data. You can go out and look at videos where people hack into TVs, they hack into refrigerators. They do things like turn refrigerators off, turn the temperature up too high, or other things that are even more scary, like on TVs that have webcams or other things built into them where they can actually turn those on and watch what you're doing in your house. So you have to be really cognizant of the fact that anything you buy today and connect and you get asked, okay, connect this to Wi-Fi, it needs to do updates. There's a chance, a potential that something bad could happen there.
You know, I remember doing a story one time about some sort of a device you would hold sitting in a car outside of a home, and you could focus in on the house. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's that called?
Flipper Zero.
And do we see that happening still?
Yes, very much so. And those devices are extremely powerful. They're easy, and they're extremely easy to use as well. And they allow you to do things like open garage doors, unlock cars, turn on systems, open gates, all kinds of things that are connected electronically. These tools that hackers have can do nefarious things.
So what are some of the other devices we have to worry about?
If you're talking about your home devices,
yeah.
I mean, it's really anything. Think about anything that you buy now that's connected to any of the smart home type of things like Alexa or other things. Not saying they're inherently bad, but when you make this interconnectivity, what we do for convenience, we want to connect things so we can walk in and tell all the lights to turn on or the stove to come on or other things to happen. There comes with that convenience an idea that you could be giving up security, especially as attackers may be targeting some of those things.
Including a smart thermostat.
That's another great example. So an attacker could change the thermostat in your home to drive it up or down or turn it off.
How would you know if someone's trying to get into your devices?
It's very difficult to know when someone's trying to actively attack your devices. And you typically will find out because it's doing something that it doesn't normally do. Like, for instance, your thermostat being raised to 90 degrees or whatever it might happen. Usually for us as consumers, these devices are so open so that they can be connected and talk to other things. We don't have good notification mechanisms that these are being changed, especially by people who wouldn't normally change them. So it's very difficult for you to know someone's done something until it's already done.
So what are our protections?
I think, you know, you should have on any of these devices that you bring home and you connect, you should have the option not to connect to Wi-Fi or connect to the internet in some way or form. Now, I know many of us want to do that. We like to do the remote viewing of our cameras and all those sorts of things, but they do open you up to the potential that you have risks. So doing things like, once again, good passwords on those systems, good firewalls, meaning you can buy from your ISP, your internet provider, potentially a firewall that can allow you to connect your systems in a safe manner. I would recommend people connect in their homes when they're going to do a Wi-Fi network. They do a network that's purely for their computers that has either with their work from home, their business or personal data on, and a different one for the Internet of Things. So their TVs, their coffee maker, their stove, their thermostats, their cameras, all running in different networks. That way you can protect your data from one of those devices potentially being compromised.
It would be such a shame to have this wonderful technology, the ability to use the internet, the Bluetooth, this and that, and feel like, as we said earlier, you have to live in a cave. You can't connect them because somebody might connect with you.
Yeah, and it's that convenience thing I mentioned before, how it's one of those things that you just have to deal with. And there are really some good protections you can put in place or good safeguards you can put in place to try to remove that. Like I said, segmenting those networks or being really cognizant of what you connect. But I agree with you. It's a sad testament on where we are today when we have to be so focused on security and what can happen when we do attach things to the internet.
Yeah, a sad commentary. So let's flip it here. Holiday shopping will soon be here, right?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
That's correct.
And many of us do most of that online. And they call you Cyber Santa?
They do. Yes, sir.
What do you watch out for? Oh, look at you.
Yeah, done that before.
What should we watch out for?
You have to really be careful now about things like phishing and emails that you get that are focused on scamming people in the holiday sense. So, discounts or coupons that are too good to be true, free stuff that's given to you via email, and they say click on this link to collect your prize or get your discount. You have to be really careful about those type of communications. So scammers are using those very heavily now, as well as you mentioned before, what we call vishing, which is when somebody or smishing when somebody texts you something like, you got a discount here at the store, come and get it, or there's a package, you know, this is a pretty common one, you've got a package waiting to be delivered and on your phone you have a link to click, and when you click it you essentially invite the threat actors into your phone, or either that or you share information with them. So you have to be really careful. I would say if something's too good to be true, it probably is.
Well, Cyber Santa Steve Cobb, you do look a little like Santa, you know, you've been told.
I don't
that
have
before.
A hat right now, but yeah, I most definitely have.
All right. Thanks for joining us. A lot of good information. Just keep an eye on what we have and try to change passwords.
Sure, I'll try to protect as much as I can. Yes,
all
sir.
Right. All right, Steve, thanks so much for being with us. And coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth, a recent incident involving Miami Dolphins wide receiver Tyreek Hill and what people are calling a rough arrest has raised a number of questions. We talk with our legal expert about what your rights are and obligations and what you're supposed to do during a traffic stop. We'll be right back and we'll talk about that. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News in Depth. Body cam video of a traffic stop involving Miami Dolphins wide receiver Tyreek Hill earlier this month has gone viral. This footage showing the NFL star being pulled from his car and handcuffed on the ground has garnered plenty of attention, but who was at fault here, really? And what exactly are your rights if you're pulled over by the police? To discuss some of those subjects, let's bring in our legal consultant, Ugo Lord. And always good to see you, Ugo. You've had a lot to say online about this particular case. Let's talk about that. We looked at some video there, and I think that what we want to be able to do is talk about the controversy of the situation. So let's take a look at this again.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, get out of the car.
Give me your ass,
get out of the car.
Give me your ass, we'll break that.
Get out of the car.
So let's talk about what happened there. As you saw, Hill was pulled over for speeding. He was cooperative, but then things kind of went out of control. And in your professional opinion, what do you think happened?
Yeah, so first things first, Hal, the fact is that there is actually no law on the books that requires someone to roll down their window when they speak to a police officer. So immediately, Tyreek Hill was correct when he rolled up his window. The problem, though, is that the Supreme Court has ruled that if an officer fears for their safety, they can ask for somebody to step out of their vehicle. And we saw that Tyreek's window was tinted. And because the window is tinted, it's easy for the officer to argue, I don't know what was going on in that car, step out.
So does that mean the Supreme Court ruling is up to interpretation?
Yeah, it's interesting because it actually gives officers a wide latitude when you define what is officer safety. The bar is very low, and an officer can claim pretty much anything that is reasonable threatens their safety. And not being able to see into that car, it's a reasonable...
Okay, let's talk about this because Let's say an officer doesn't like your attitude. Mm. Can they cuff you?
No, they absolutely cannot. In order to detain an individual, there must be an articulable reason as to why the officer's safety is in question. You have First Amendment free speech. Even if you swear at an officer, that in and of itself still is not enough for the officer to put you in cuffs.
Why do I think that doesn't make sense? I mean, if you got in some officer's face and swore at that officer, mm-hmm. you think the officer would say, thank you for that, sir.
You know, Hal, as you bring up an interesting point, because there are these interesting people called First Amendment auditors, and essentially what they do is try to straddle the line between their First Amendment protections and whether or not an officer crosses the line. And they wait for that moment to catch it on camera. And if the officer crosses the line, they file a lawsuit. Some people, this is their full-time job in order to test that system.
Wow. Now that's really interesting. So how should a person respond in a traffic stop?
I always tell people the first thing that you should always do is comply. We see that the officer asked Mr. Hill to roll down his window. It took him a while before he actually complied. And when he did, he rolled it down a crack. So I always say comply first, sue later. Clearly the officer became aggressive, and that's why that officer was put on leave.
But there are times when the adrenaline gets going and a person feels like they're being unfairly treated.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there's no doubt that there are circumstances where we feel that someone could feel like they are being targeted or they're being treated in a different way than another person would be treated. We are in this situation where we see Tyreek Hill is an African-American male who's now being spoken to very aggressively by these officers. At the same time, he also is something that many of us don't have, is that he is a multi-millionaire. He's extremely rich, driving a $300,000 car, and that also sets another target on him. So there's this balance between individuals, what they are experiencing as an individual, and what the law says an officer can do.
So let's talk about that you just referred to, because there are drivers who are of different races, there are drivers of different backgrounds,
right.
And some feel that they are treated differently. So what do you do in those cases?
You know, it's interesting how, as an African-American myself, I always make sure that whenever I'm pulled over by a police officer, knock on wood, hopefully it does not happen anytime soon. I need to find wood, Hal. Knocking somewhere. The first thing that I always do is make sure that the officer can see my hands, because back to that Supreme Court case, they have to be able to say that they are safe. And I do not want to give an officer any excuse whatsoever to not feel safe around me during a traffic stop.
So let's say somebody has tinted windows like Tyreek Hill. What do you tell them?
The best thing to do is roll down your window, get your driver's license ready ahead of time. It's the best thing that you can do, so that way you're not reaching for anything when the officer is next to you. Once you're pulled over, roll down that window, shut off your car, get your driver's license and your registration ready, and present it to the officer.
So you end up in these situations where you feel you have rights, but the officer has rights too.
Yeah.
And the officer can perceive, for whatever reason,
yes,
that they are being threatened.
Yeah, Hal, you're right. But one thing that is very particular here in the state of California, that's actually a new law that took effect this year, is that an officer has to articulate first why they pulled you over. They cannot simply pull you over and say, do you know why I pulled you over? Or have you to speculate or guess why you're pulled over. They have to communicate that with you first and foremost once you roll down your window. So.
And what are the California laws with regard to tinted windows?
You know, it's interesting because we saw Tyreek Hill had these very tinted windows, but that was in Miami. Here in California, it cannot be over 30% for the front seats. That is the legal limit, 30%. In the back, it could be 100% tint if you want in the back, but that front passenger seat and the driver's seat has to be 30%. Nothing on the windshield except for that top 4 inches.
We've just about run out of our 100%.
It happens so quickly on this show.
It's so good to talk to you all the time.
It's good
all right,
to be here.
Fox 11 News and Death will continue right after this break. Don't go away. Thank you, Hugo.
Thank you very much, Hal. It's always good to be here. Always good to see you. You're looking better and better every time I see you.
Thank you.
You're aging backwards. How do you do it?
What was that movie?
was it Brad Pitt? Benjamin Button.
Benjamin Button. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, just check out my podcast. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.